their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. It's good to be back. How are you doing today, Rick?
Good. And we've got some, at least for us, some exciting news, and we think it could be exciting for others as well.
I think it's very good news. Very happy. As we were alluding to last week, we've got the potential for getting things back to somewhat normal here pretty soon, and we're going to take advantage of that, I think. And so we'll talk about that in a minute. And then we also, we're going to talk today about ways to go lighter in terms of equipment choices and packing choices. And when you know, carrying all of your stuff isn't always the best idea. You know, last week we were talking a little bit about those medium format systems being kind of heavy. But, you know, how can you slim down your kit for
when you
certain
want to.
Times? Yeah, for those times when that's the most important objective. Because not everything is a photo safari worth, you know, caravans and Sherpas and all that other good stuff.
Right. But let's talk about workshops first, since we did hint at that last week and we made some awfully good progress over the last week or so, ever since your vaccine date really getting nailed down.
Yes. So that was the good news. I got my first shot last week.
And you didn't die?
And no, actually, I was fine. We'll see what happens with the second shot.
Yeah, my second one is on Monday, and my first one was great. You know, no problems to speak of. So,
and you know, we'll each had a happens. Different one. You got what? Pfizer. I got Moderna, mm-hmm. And you know, yeah. I actually know someone who got Johnson & Johnson the other day, so that's cool. Ooh. Too. Anyway, but we encourage all of our listeners to get vaccinated, of course, because that's the only way we're really going to get back to doing what we're talking about, which is having some workshops in the field.
So let's talk about the first one that's coming up in right. One of our favorite areas of the country, Oregon.
So yeah, we thought about this. Yeah, we're going to go to Oregon, and we're going to have a five-day workshop starting in Portland. So it's going to be the waterfalls and coastal areas. So a lot of water theme in this one. Mm-hmm. Waters, forest.
Green things.
Yes, which I really miss this time of year around here, to be yeah. honest. So I'm really, really excited. This is going to be the week of, it's going to start on Sunday, the 9th of May, and run until Thursday, May 13th. So that's really a good time to be in Oregon. Usually the weather is nice. It's cool, but not cold. I mean, it's spring. Things are green. We are going to, well, I mean, we'll talk about some of those things. And if you were on our Facebook page recently, you probably saw the photo I posted of Multnomah Falls that we captured way back in 2011. I was using a D3S at the time. We have a few more megapixels to play with, so that's going to be fun. But we'll do the Columbia River Gorge and the waterfalls.
Yeah, which is a wonderful place and some nice little creek photography and just all sorts of fun with water, you know.
Exactly.
Motion blur, and again, it's just so green and beautiful in that area.
So you bring your polarizer and you bring your...
Yeah, and then we'll head over the coast, go through Astoria, and over to a place called Fort Stevens, where there's a cool old coastal battery to photograph. There's also a shipwreck that's out on the beach, kind of, that's interesting. And then head down to where we'll be staying for a couple of nights, which is Cannon Beach. Lots of mm-hmm. people know Cannon Beach. Beautiful
yeah.
rock formations out in the water, Haystack Rock, and some other things in the vicinity. They're also really great shooting locations. And then on our after spending, you know, several days in that area, we'll go through Tillamook and Cape Mears. and on back to Portland. And then we've got an optional extension and potential standalone workshop shop for people who aren't doing the main one that'll be on infrared photography. And we'll be doing it at the Portland Japanese Gardens, which is a really cool place.
Mm-hmm. And so we'll do shooting and then we'll have a classroom session. We'll post-process infrared. Mm-hmm. We'll go through all of the mechanisms. And that we're going to, that one will start the evening of the 13th of May. And then we'll have our shooting and classroom session most of the day on Friday, May 14th.
Mm-hmm. And it should be awesome. Like I said, it's one of our favorite areas to shoot. We've done a lot of workshops there. I've made a lot of personal trips there. I was born there.
There you go.
That's where my family's from. But it is a cool place. And then the next one, again, a place that we're very familiar with and have done a bunch of workshops at, and that's Crested Butte, Colorado, mm-hmm. in July. And this aligns with the wildflower season in that area. And it's, you know, I think it's billed as the wildflower capital of the U.S. And it is really beautiful that time of year. Just amazing.
Yeah, and we've shot there numerous times. I've been doing, I mean, you and I have both done workshops together, mm-hmm. there. We've just gone and shot there. It does require having a car because you don't just fly to Crested Butte. You have to, you know, you have to get there. However, we'll be staying right in town, and we've already got rooms reserved for our group to be there for, it's July 18th, which is a Sunday, through the 21st. And the idea here is that we're not competing with the weekend crowds that tend to show up there in the summer. We'll be doing midweek shooting. But really, the best part about this area is that almost all of the flower spots are easily accessible by most normal vehicles. You do not need a Jeep. You don't need, I mean, there are famous places that you hear about with those, you know, basins and stuff, but those logistically are quite, they're difficult. You need a real, honest to God, four-wheel drive and spend a day getting there to shoot in those spots. Whereas in Crested Butte, everything is accessible practically on the roadside. So we don't have, there's not any strenuous hiking. You are at altitude, but you're not very far from your car. So it's really simple. And we'll do a lot of macro and close-up work. That tends to be the focus of that location. But there's columbines and paintbrush and all kinds of, you know, the colors, and you can do all kinds of fun stuff with that. And so we'll be teaching focus stacking and macro and all, you know,
diffusers and stuff like
right.
that.
So it's a real fun workshop. And then, as we mentioned before, you'll be joining me on my workshop August 29th through September 2nd to return to South Dakota Badlands. I go every year. This will be year 11. For me, and so that's open. And so, you know, the good news here is that we're getting things back to normal, and that's because vaccines are rolling out. That's because we're both getting, you know, our shots. We still will have to comply with whatever state rules there may be, but because, like, for example, right now Oregon has a 2-week quarantine if you're not vaccinated. So we're hoping we would like to get outside of that, you know.
The hot tip would be get vaccinated.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's good in many ways.
It is. So if you can get that, you can join us on one of these upcoming workshops. And we'll link to them from our Facebook page. They're also going to be on my website at luminescentphoto.com, where you can register for these. So they will be, by the time you hear this podcast, they will be open for registration. And if you have any questions, let us know.
Please join us. We are so excited to do this with you guys and see some of our old friends again.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I can't begin to describe how excited we are. Actually,
no, it was just
probably embarrassing. But
this whole week when I was calling up and working on the logistics of some of these things, you know, going and doing the research, it was like, wow, I'm finally getting back to doing what I used to normally do all the time. This is really refreshing. And speaking with some of the hotel management, they were like, yeah, we can't wait to get things back to, you know, normal, or whatever you want to call normal anymore. But Yeah, we just both love going to these places. They're high on our list of fun places to go and shoot and just enjoy. Plus, they got good ice cream and beer in Oregon. You know, it's like it's always nice.
There will be a stop at the Tillamook Creamery.
Yeah, that's just mandatory. So,
It is.
yeah.
All
So if you
right.
like
So,
waffle cones and ice cream, you know, that's, you know, extra bonus, right? I mean, there's
So let's
always room
talk
for
about
that.
our other topic,
Yeah.
which is, what are some tips and tricks that we've used when we really had to reduce the weight of what we were taking, the size of what we were taking, or just wanted to? And I don't know what my philosophy is going to be with the Oregon trip right now. I'm kind of going two ways on that.
Right.
We'll see where it ends up.
Well, I mean, going, you know, sometimes you need to strip down your kit for, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why it would come up. I mean, one is just simply, you know, if you're traveling internationally, you know, the carry-on restrictions and the amount of stuff that you have, it can be a real pain. Plus, you don't want to carry everything, you know, just from a standpoint of something gets lost or stolen, God forbid, you know, you just don't want to have a lot of, it's just easier to be more compact. But there's other times when, let's say you're going on a trip or you're doing an excursion of some kind, and it's not really a photography trip, you know, it's like something else, but you want to bring your camera. So you really don't want to have to be the one with 30 pounds of gear, because that's not a thing. Like, for example, I have a client who booked some one-on-one consulting time with me, and he's going on the Grand Canyon on a rafting trip. Well, it's not a photography trip, but he wants to have his camera, and so we were talking about ways to get him down to sort of one camera, one lens, or maybe one camera, two lenses, and going small. Because it's not a photography trip, and that what he's trying to do, and it has to be in a waterproof bag, and all of these things that, you know, create constraints.
So one thing that jumps out at me, certainly the newer mirrorless cameras enable you to get the body size down quite a bit,
Right.
and that helps. So if you have that option, that can be a great starting point. The other thing is, especially compared with, let's say, 10 years ago, the wide-ranging zooms are really good these days. We've talked about the Nikon 24 to 200, and that is an awfully good lens. I'm not going to say it's absolutely perfect, but it is awfully good. And it's such a pleasure to use in terms of the size and the weight and not having to change lenses. So if you don't have a lens like that, I think especially these days, the new ones for the mirrorless systems are, almost must-haves. Canon's got a 24 to 240 millimeter lens that's good. There's a Tamron 28 to 200 for Sony's that's very good. So there's some really nice options out there.
It is surprising how much better they've gotten.
Yeah, they really have, and they're very pleasant to use. So that alone could take things down quite a bit and potentially be the only lens you take on some trips.
And I think dovetail in with this was something that we were talking about before we were recording this, which was, you know, depending on where you're going, if it's somewhere you've been before or just the kind of place you've been before, go in and use your, go back and look at your photos in a catalog program or some way where you can see the range of focal lengths that you tend to gravitate towards. And I do this all the time. When I look at
Yeah,
my
me
shots
too.
after coming back from a trip, you know, it's super easy with Lightroom, but you can do it elsewhere, you know, and just say, you know, if 80% of my shots are between 24 and, you know, and 100 or 150, you know, it's like, well, you know, I could probably get away with just that. Do I really need the other, you know, the extra telephoto, or do I really need the super wide? You know, it's not that you wouldn't use it if you had it, but if you didn't have it, you wouldn't be missing out on all your shots. You wouldn't be kicking yourself for not having it. And I think
Right.
that's the thing. I mean, because then you can really get an idea of what is it that you need. Because I know that we both go through that feeling when you're packing for something. Oh, should I really leave this out? So easy to overpack, right? Because you're, well, you know.
It would be cool to have this. I might use it.
Right.
Probably
and,
won't.
And, you know, neither of us are going to sit here and say that the 24 to 200 is optically on par with, you know, the classic, you know, fixed aperture zoom, like a 24 to 70 plus 70 to 200 combo. But for the kind of shooting that you might be doing, a lot of times it won't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're really on an assignment with fine art where your mission is to make 24 by 36 inch prints, edge to edge, full frame, uncropped. I mean, there is something to be said about the quality of these newer zooms. So
there really
it's
is.
Just something to keep in mind.
I think the next thing on the list would be, what do you do about a tripod? And we've talked about small ones like tabletop tripods, and those can work. But, you know, this isn't something I would recommend for our Oregon workshop or the Crested Butte one or the Badlands one. I would recommend bringing a tripod for all of those, obviously. But
a full size one,
even. Things, you don't absolutely need one, especially with the good IBIS systems and cameras. Those will get you down to pretty slow shutter speed in many cases, so you can get by that way. They're easier, you know, today's cameras are easier to shoot at ground level because of the flipping LCD screens in the back. It's not as awkward as it used to be. So you can make that work. And there are always things like, you know, put something on a jacket or whatever, set it on a rock for stability. So, you know, you can consider just flat leaving a tripod at home, or worst case, just a tabletop tripod.
I have a travel tripod we've talked about in the past. It folds down to nothing. It's good enough for, I guess a good question to ask, because I'll bring this up, is what is it that you need the tripod for? If your shooting requires a tripod, then, you know, that's a good thing to have. If it's the kind of thing where you're just doing walkabout shooting and it might get a little lower light, well, between, like you said, stabilization systems and ISO performance, lean up against a wall, you know, brace yourself, you can do quite a bit. What I usually do is I'll have that folding, you know, Gitzo travel thingy. And while it's not super tall, it's good enough for most of the stuff that I do. And it only comes out, it goes in my suitcase, and it only comes out in the evenings or early in the morning when I'm deliberately trying to do some longer exposure stuff, like where I want to blur, you know, like blue hour shooting, and I want to get motion blur of cars or boats on a canal or whatever. Other than that, I'm walking around just handheld the rest of the time, at least when I'm doing those kinds of trips. Like you said, when we're doing a fine art landscape workshop, like what we'll do in Oregon and the Badlands, you want a tripod for the kind of shooting we're doing, because that's the mission.
Yeah. The other thing is, I wouldn't want to use a travel tripod on a beach near the surf.
True. They're just too small.
They're too small.
Too thin.
And the legs are too narrow
to
float on top of the sand, which is what you want. And you don't want it getting knocked over with a breeze too, which can happen.
Oh, yes.
So filters are another thing. I mean, they're not huge, but they take up space in the bag and potentially push you into a larger one. You know, one of the things I think, you know, first of all, be realistic. What do you really need? Can you get by with maybe just a polarizer?
I mean, there's so few. Well, yeah, we had an episode and we talked about filters, and we're just not bringing nearly as many filters anymore.
And yeah, and if you end up taking multiple lenses that have multiple filter sizes, get yourself some step up rings so that you don't have to have a filter per lens or things like that, or a set of them. That's a smart thing no matter what. You know, the only issue with it is if you're using a step-up ring, your lens hood isn't going to fit anymore, which is a bit of a bumper. But, you know, this is about making compromises that are smart.
And realistically, there's only a handful of situations that you and I come across where we need the filter. So then, so like thinking about forward to Oregon when you're shooting those waterfalls, a polarizer will not only help, cut glare off the water, but it's going to slow down the shutter speed a little bit so you get that nice motion blur. Having something like a 3 to 5 stop-ish neutral density filter would be useful on a trip like that. But when I'm wandering around the streets of London, I don't need a filter most of the
No.
time. It's like
No.
just not necessary anymore. So anyway, that's a good one. And then there's, we talk about the other thing that can start to really weigh you down is all of the, we're talking sort of about accessories. And the choice of camera bag that you make can really impact the weight, because some camera bags are just heavy to begin with.
They're not necessarily large. They're just heavy. And it has to do with the materials they're made out of, how much padding is inside them. And, it's like the absolute worst is a leather bag. I mean, those things just weigh a ton. But there are all sorts of good options. And what I would suggest is look for the ones that are less than 1 kilogram, less than a couple pounds. There are plenty of options. What you don't want to do is end up with a bag that's, roughly double that. And they're you'll find them for the same size. So, take a look at the specs. If you have some of your own, a stack in the closet, like most of us do, really think hard about what you take. And
And
also, reducing the bag size can force you into a smaller amount of equipment, which is not a bad thing.
And another alternative, and it depends on what you're doing and where you're going and where you're staying, but you could have a larger bag and then put things into a smaller bag for your excursions. Just your larger bag might hold everything plus other stuff, not just camera gear. And then, but you're not wandering around. Like, I'll tell you right now, like, you can fit a lot of gear into a 45 liter backpack, but oh my gosh, you do not want to be wandering around,
No.
with a 45 liter backpack on. It's just too big. Even if there's not much in it, it's just so bulky. So, one of our favorite packs is that 18 liter Mindshift, what is it called? Backlight 18L. And the slightly larger one is the 26 liter, and that's bigger, but both of those can be really nice to get around with. And you can fit a laptop in it if you need to. And speaking of
And
the laptop,
they're not heavy for a
yeah, they're
backpack.
not heavy. And then speaking of the laptop, maybe you don't bring your laptop on a trip. Maybe you bring an iPad or tablet to just be able to review photos if you need to, or depending on how fancy you want to get with your workflow.
The other thing
Or you
is,
just wait and just get home and take your
well,
photos. I
I'll
mean,
give you one other option, which is your phone.
exactly. If you have the app for your camera, you might be able to save out some JPEGs, even do a little in-camera processing and transfer them over to your phone so you can just share a couple of pictures along the way. You don't need every single photo.
Yeah, and while the in-camera raw processing has some limitations, I mean, you can't do local adjustments and stuff, but you can do a lot. You can change your color profiles, your contrast,
Oh yeah, your
all sorts
tone, your
of things, cropping. So don't forget about just your phone, filling that void. It really is surprisingly good.
And also just the fact that our phones become our backup cameras. If you know what your phone can do from a photography standpoint, there's some stuff we talked about, iPhone stuff, like that long exposure thing that it can do, where and there's ways to set that up. And there's an article on my website, I think, on how to do that from a year or two ago. It's really great. And so you have some alternatives to your regular camera too.
Yeah.
And you can get some pretty nice photos from it. So
You can just, two things to learn about your phone if you don't already. Learn how to make it focus at a certain point. And learn how to vary the exposure. Those are two really simple things, and most people don't seem to know how to use those with their phones. Learn those, and then it becomes a much more effective backup tool for you.
Absolutely. So did we miss anything on our list? I mean, I think that's the typical, I think the biggest thing for me is trusting that these newer lenses are good enough to, you know, that I'm not compromising my photography by bringing what 20 years ago would have been, you know, a crappy lens, you know, and it's getting through that. There's a mental impediment, you know, there's a psychological roadblock to not wanting to pack all those nice, great lenses that you have.
The other thing is trust your creativity.
Mm-hmm.
When you're faced with constraints, like maybe just one lens, maybe even one focal length, that you in fact can still make good photos. You'll just change the photos that you make. They can still be great. They'll just be slightly different ones. So trust in that. You don't have to have every single thing necessarily for those situations where you are limited.
Oh yeah. And the, you know, the penalty is you bring all that stuff and then you're just miserable. You're not taking good photos at all, because all you're thinking about is how heavy your backpack is and make it to the next rest stop. So.
Yeah. And with the stuff that we were talking about, a really smart thing is do at least one, preferably two dry runs going out and shooting somewhere with that small set of equipment that you've elected to take. Make sure that the bag works okay. It's easy to get things in and out of there. And you're not forgetting something obvious. It's a good thing to do. But
absolutely.
There are things I've certainly done many times, and it's worked pretty well. It's just a matter of how motivated I am to do that.
We'll see what you bring to Oregon, Rick.
I have no idea right now. I'm not kidding. I've been swinging both ways.
Well, you know, there's an old saying that says, a man with a watch knows what time it is. A man with two watches is never really sure.
Yeah, I'll just say I'm never really sure.
Well, right. Anyway, that's our show for today. We hope to see you guys. Again, we'll put the links out in our Facebook page, facebook.com/imagedoctors, as well as on my website, luminescentphoto.com.
And please join us for those, because they're going to be fun.
Oh, they're going to be fun.
Especially after this last year. I think it's the kind of thing that so many of us are, you know, craving. So we're going to help enable you to fill that void.
There you go. All right. So until next time, happy shooting.
All right. Bye-bye.